The Boogie Monster with Kyle Kinane and Dave Stone. We can finally once and for all find out what happened with Judas Priest. Whether they broke up by themselves or they were pushed out by outside forces like the government.
The Boogie Monster. Podcasting the unknown.
I'm doing it.
You just doing it?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Like usual.
Uh-huh. It's been so long. I forgot the procedure.
I was not to be crass, but one of my concerns was that we're going to have to sell dildos before this one and then talk about your dad.
Oh yeah.
And I really wasn't prepared to make that kind of transition to go from an Adam and Eve ad.
Yeah.
And what's going on in your life, Dave?
Well, I don't think my dad would have minded. He's like, well, as long as you're getting paid.
All right. Well, you know? We don't have an Adam and Eve ad this week, so we're not getting paid. So now I feel bad that we disappointed him.
Yeah, he wouldn't care either way. How you doing, buddy?
I'm okay.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah? I mean,
yeah. You know, as all things considered, I'm doing well.
Yeah. It's been a summer.
Yeah, it's been a crazy... God, how long has it been since we've actually recorded together? It's been like 2 months.
Has it been?
Maybe not that long.
When did you... Well, you took off...
I left June 5th.
You left June 5th, so we were talking... We recorded right before then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy...
Lots
crazy
happened.
Few months,
yeah,
man.
Lots happened since then.
Tour started off great. Good tour.
Yeah.
And right towards the end... Got the bad news. Most people probably understand what we're referring to now, you know, since I put it out there on Instagram, I think maybe Twitter. But if not, my dad passed away June 24th, and really caught everybody off guard. Always been in good health.
Yeah.
Made it to 75. He was 75 years old. Always been in good health. Never overweight. Hadn't drank or smoked in... I think he stopped when he was about 35, so 40 years of clean living.
I feel that's, yeah.
Yeah, and well, you and I were talking about this off the air. For those, I've mentioned it a few times on here, but my mother is a paraplegic. She's been in a wheelchair ever since she was 21, fell off the back of a motorcycle, broke her back when she was 21, and been in a wheelchair ever since, and... just being in a wheelchair like that, she's what they call a paraplegic. She's paralyzed from the waist down. Just a whole bunch of health problems stem from that. So not to be morbid, but like they kind of groomed us me and my brother, our whole life was like, you know, with mom's illness or disability, she's probably not going to live to be a little old lady. So
yeah.
We always kind of had that in the back of our mind. And it was always kind of like, well, okay, you know, at some point, mom will probably pass away first, and my brother and I, you know, since we've been adults for the last 20 years, that's a reoccurring conversation we've had. It's like, well, what are we going to do with dad when mom passes?
Yeah.
You know, like good sons, good children do, you want to, you know, make plans and mentally prepare and literally prepare, you know, for that kind of stuff, and... So we just always assumed that mom would pass first, and then dad would. And dad being in great health, I just always assumed he would be one of these cute little old 95-year-old men.
Yeah.
You know, with his army veteran's hat, and you know, sitting at the diner complaining about politics. But so it really caught everybody off guard. Long story short, this all happened in the span of about 4 or 5 days while I was on tour. It was a Wednesday, actually. I was in Chicago, went to a Cubs game.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun, and actually sent. I made a little. My dad's always been a big baseball fan, so I made a little video of Wrigley Field. You know, because he loves baseball, but he's never been. So I made him a little video, and I sent it to him on Wednesday, and not knowing that that was the day he went to the doctor. He had been feeling kind of weird, and he couldn't. My dad's always been like kind of a quiet, tough guy. Like, that's one thing
category. Yeah. Like, they don't... If you got problems, you keep them to yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, he's always... that's one thing I always admired about my dad. Like, he was a tough, macho dude without being obnoxious about it. And not macho in the sense, like, he wasn't verbose, but, like, he was a dude.
He was, you know? Yeah, he was a dude.
He was in the military. He was just, he was a dude. He was a man's man, but he wasn't like, he didn't have to remind you. He didn't talk.
I think
didn't
that's
run
even more
mouth.
Of a quality of being yeah. a dude is yeah. you don't have to remind
exactly.
people you're a dude.
He was not a loud mouth. He wasn't boisterous, but you always, I just, you know, and part of that is, you know, because he was my dad, mm-hmm. but like, I always just knew at the end of the day, like, oh, dad didn't take care
He's
of shit.
He's going to get handled. Yeah.
yeah. So, and he never complained. He wasn't a hypochondriac. He was, you know, and he kind of raised me that way too, especially with mom being in a wheelchair. Like, I think I got a double dose of like, oh, you don't complain unless it's really warranted. Mm-hmm. You know, someone's always got it worse. Look across the living room, your mom, you know, she's in a wheelchair yeah. for the rest of her life. So I don't want to hear you complaining about your bum knee or you hurt your toe or like
perspective yeah. and appreciation got, for life.
You got the sniffles, like, you know, it was none of that. It was always just, you know, just mm-hmm. shut up and deal with it. And so anyway, long story short, that Wednesday he went to the doctor. He'd been feeling weird, and they ran some tests, and they said, all right, we'll let you know when these tests come back. We'll let yeah. you know what's up. So him and my mom went out to eat. On the way home, they stopped by one of their favorite spots was Ruby Tuesday. Yeah. They love Ruby Tuesday. They love that salad
bar.
They
got a good salad bar.
Solid salad bar.
Not a good salad bar.
But the way mom tells the story is like as soon as the food came, they got the phone call. Yeah. And doctor said, you guys at home yet? And she's like, no, we're actually eating lunch. And he made it sound super urgent. He was like, well, y'all need to get back here ASAP. And like they didn't even eat their meal. They just came yeah. back directly to the hospital or the doctor. And long story short, he had blockages in his heart. His arteries were clogged. And they said that it's real bad. Like I think they said only 30% of his heart was functioning or something. But they said it's real bad. You got a bunch of clogged arteries. We got to have surgery as soon as possible.
I wonder about bringing that kind of panic up to somebody.
Yeah.
Like if you're already in a like a delicate position that they know about.
Yeah.
And then to be like, drop everything and get like to put that stress.
Yeah.
On somebody. So, not criticizing either way.
Oh yeah.
It's a curious thing to mm-hmm. handle. Of like,
yeah, it's a lot.
Oh, you're in a
with.
Fragile situation. We need to see you right away. But mm-hmm. also, stress can affect that situation.
Yeah. So. And this is in Milledgeville, Georgia, the doctor that they went to. My folks live in, if anybody is familiar with that really rural area of Georgia, mm-hmm. my folks live in Worthen, Georgia, not far from Sandersville. Next biggest city is like 50 minutes away, which is Milledgeville. So that's where they would go to the doctor and stuff like that. So they sent him to a hospital in Augusta. And once he got settled in there in Augusta, which is about an hour away, then they realized, oh, crap, we don't have any surgeons here that are good enough or qualified enough to actually do this procedure. So the next day they sent him to Atlanta. Anybody mm-hmm. knows anything about Atlanta knows that Emory Hospital is a real good hospital. So by like Friday afternoon, they got him to Atlanta, and they had scheduled – he needed open heart bypass surgery, like some real serious stuff. They got it scheduled for Monday morning, and – family and doctors and nurses, everybody was optimistic, and it was just the question mark was, you know, as long as he can survive the surgery on Monday.
Yeah,
it's a risky surgery, but it's got a good success rate. Now he's going to have a huge long recovery, you know, once he gets out of here. But everybody was just fingers crossed for Monday's surgery, and Sunday morning he went into cardiac arrest and died. So didn't even dawn on me, you know, like it was just. We all thought, like, well, he's in the hospital. He's monitored. There's doctors. He's 24/7. Let's just hope Monday works out. Didn't even dawn on me that something would happen between the admittance and the surgery. So I was in Cincinnati having a good week at Go Bananas, and woke up Sunday morning, and my brother texted me, said, please call now. And I knew exactly.
Really?
I knew what that meant. So – Pops passed away, but, you know, not to be all cliche, but that's part of life. And I guess I've been lucky. You know, I'll be 41 this week, and it's the first time I've ever had a real close experience with death. You know, I've been real fortunate that nobody close to me. I mean, both grandparents have died, but, you know, that I wasn't super close to them.
Well,
they were really old.
You're a dude, too, so that's why I'm worried about you. You play close to the vest.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah,
you know.
I don't know. It's been weird. It's been a weird month. Like, this is all new to me, you know? And, mm-hmm. you know, it's something you think about all the time. It's something I've thought about for years, like we were talking about, like, you know, when your parents get older. And, you know, I've been trying to mentally prepare myself for this, but, you know, it doesn't work. But but what I've been trying to do now, like in the last – since it's happened, it's been about a month now, is just find that perspective and find the silver linings. And I know a lot of people say this about family mm-hmm. members when they die or whatever, but, like, my dad was a great dude. Yeah. Like, he really was. And I'm so fortunate that – and this is no hyperbole. Like, I have zero – negative memories of my father.
Yeah.
Zero. Now, you know, we had our ups and downs, just me being a thick-headed, dumbass teenage boy. You know, we went round and round and stuff. But nothing serious, nothing long-term. Yeah. There was never – me and my mother had more ups and downs than my father just because, you know, my mom's emotional and the male-female thing. And my dad
– clash, yeah.
Yeah, me and my dad just always – we were on the same level with stuff. And I'm really fortunate that – I mean, I seriously, I don't have any negative memories. And I realize that, you know, a lot of people don't have that, you know. A lot of people when their dad or their mother die, you know, it's bittersweet or it's, you know, like, oh, I'm so sad they're gone, but, man, he was an asshole, or I still have all these –
regrets that you didn't say what you wanted to say in the moment.
And the only regret I have is just the fact that for the past – almost 7 years I've been out here and I've only got to see them about once or twice a year, you know, and not to be morbid, but like every time I go home to visit and when I'm pulling out of their driveway and there's a little part of me in the back of my brain, it's like, I hope this isn't the last time I see them.
Man, I don't see, you know, think about that too. But in the same way, I mean, not, and again, I don't have the perspective that you have on this stuff. Rachel talks about Rachel's mom passed away.
Yeah.
You know, over the course of a year, but relatively quickly and unexpectedly. And like even if you were still there, if you were living in Atlanta, I mean, like my sister, when she lived in Chicago, I'd see my parents just as much with the amount of time that she'd make it out.
Yeah.
Even though it was only, at, you know, 25 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the distant thing is weird. But you were, I mean, you were going to make your own life even if you were still in Atlanta.
And my mom made a good point too. It's like, you know, the last 7 years or whatever, but when I do come home to visit, they've been great visits, you know. I've been present.
You make the most
of it, as opposed to like if you do live 5 miles down the road, you might take it for granted, like, oh yeah,
yeah,
good to see you, whatever.
I feel bad that maybe that's how I've been with my visits.
Yeah,
and I should be more,
but our visits have been good. And yeah, but I mean, I'm just so fortunate that, like, seriously, I just, you know, it's hard to articulate this to someone who never met the guy, but he was just a great dude. He was just, in some of the stuff that he imparted on me, like, just some of his qualities and characteristics, like, looking back at it now, stuff I didn't notice, you know, when he was alive or whatever, but, like, one thing I loved about my dad was he just, that ability to just play it cool, just, and not playing, but just
no, but just, not bothered by stuff.
Just, hey, it's going to work out. You know, it's going to work. Just don't work. Don't, not too high, not too low. Just even keel. And like and especially as a child, that's a great quality for your parents to have, because, you know, you want to know that, like, oh, it's just that security and that safety of, like, I couldn't imagine having like a dad or somebody who was just a real spaz and was always panicking and yelling and like, but like my dad was always like the worst of times. It was always like, we got this.
Yeah.
It's going to be cool. And, I mean, I'll go into some backstories if you don't mind. I just feel like
I want this
story needs to be heard.
Then you take however much time and however you want to do
Well,
it.
Well, he this just is, and again, I know
celebrate Don Stone.
I know everybody says this, but like he really was just such a great dude, and just all right. I mean, he had a terrible childhood. All right, I'll try to just. I won't drag this out too long, but
man, no, we gotta know.
Born in 1942, he's born in Erin, Tennessee, which is kind of near the Kentucky-Tennessee line, way up in kind of northwest Tennessee.
I was looking where Warthen was.
They live in Warthen.
In the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it was. But boy, he loved it. By the way, and let me tell you this:
there's only one road on Google Maps.
that's the road they live on, 102.
Yeah, that's it. Warthen Road goes through Warthen. And out of war then.
But long story short, was born, you know, back in the 40s when into extreme poverty. His dad was in World War II and by all accounts was just fried from the war. Like when he came back, a lot of PTSD. I think there probably was some alcohol and just – to hear my dad say it, a good dude, but just couldn't get his shit together and be a good father.
Yeah.
So, and mother was worse. Mother bailed on them when my dad was two.
Really?
The mom bails. You hear a lot of times dad doesn't stick around. What?
I had a few friends where that was the story, was the mom took off.
Yeah, mom took off when my dad was two. And my dad had a sister who was a year older, Sonia. So anyway, long story short, his dad remarried to just apparently, to hear my dad tell the story, just a world-class asshole. This lady, just mean, would verbally and physically abuse my father and his sister. Just a real mean lady. Would send them to school with bread sandwiches, just two pieces of bread, like almost as like – to spite, just to be mean. Here's your fucking bread sandwich. And my dad was just, you know, he's 5 years old and he's trying to figure out why is my stepmom such an asshole and why isn't my dad do anything about it? So apparently that got so bad. I don't know. He never talked in great detail about it. But something happened to where from the ages of 5 to 10, dad had to live with a revolving door of foster families.
Really?
So I don't know what happened, but his biological father and his nasty-ass stepmom were no longer in the picture from ages 5 to 10. So he got kicked around from foster family to foster family, and I think some of those weren't good. You know, he never went into great detail, but you could sometimes read between the lines that, like, I'm hoping that there wasn't any abuse, but I'm not sure. I'm not positive that there wasn't. But something happened. He was just kicked around. He used to talk about living on a turkey farm, and these people were assholes. And he lived with three or four foster families and somehow found his way.
You know, those assholes over at the turkey farm. That sounds like a euphemism.
Yeah. And somehow wound up in Detroit. So he's a 10-year-old boy. He's living in Detroit, like down, like inner city Detroit. He used to talk about just getting in fights with little black kids all the time because he was the only white kid around, and they used to chase him and try to fight him, and you know, just a scared little 10-year-old, basically orphaned white boy in downtown Detroit, and was living with a foster family there that I think was abusive or whatever. Hitchhiked at 10 years old, he ran away from his foster family and hitchhiked back to Erin, Tennessee to live with his second aunt, this lady named Nora, who then raised him from ages 10 until he graduated high school, like 17. So at 10 years old, little Donnie is like, fuck this, I'm out. And he arranged, like, he patchworked some rides. He did some hitchhiking, and then some friends of the family were driving a couple hundred miles, and he hitched, you know. Anyway, over the course of a week, 10-year-old Donnie, no supervision, somehow made it from Detroit back to Erin, Tennessee. And then I think from 10 to 17, his life was fairly good. He lived with his second aunt and her husband, and just lived on a farm with a bunch of cousins and stuff, and all that worked out great. Joined the Army right after high school during Vietnam. Wasn't drafted. Signed up. Said, I'll go. Fortunately, didn't see combat. He was stationed for 3 years in Hamburg, Germany. I always thought this was an interesting story. He spent 3 years in Hamburg and used to – and dad never – like he was always a gentleman and, you know, never glorified any of his rowdy ways. But like whenever he would talk about Hamburg, Germany, you could tell there was like – he's like, oh, they got really good beer. Oh, the beer in Germany.
A little sparkling.
Oh, man. There's really good beer and just a lot of fun. So Lord knows what he got into over there. But one cool little thing, a little anecdote he used to talk about was he saw the Beatles multiple times live in concert before they were famous.
Oh, wait, that's where they kind of lived and were getting their shit together.
Yeah, they moved to Hamburg for like a year and did like a residency at, the Cavern Club. I don't know if that was the one.
But that was like they lived there and they're...
Yeah.
Something tells me, Don, like, I don't mean this to be disrespectful, but I picture your dad like Grandpa from The Simpsons. Like, Beatles were on the stage, like, what's this noise? Like, for some reason.
Yeah.
Seems like
even when he was 22.
Yeah, I was still just like.
But yeah, he used to go see the Beatles. They were the Beatles, but they weren't the Beatles.
No, it was like they were a bar band. Mm-hmm. You know, they were doing their covers.
He used to talk about seeing them, which I thought was cool. And then after he got out of the Army, moved to Nashville, and I always thought this was interesting. Like, Dad always he loved country music. He loved music in general. And when he moved back to Nashville, he really wanted to be a musician, like a songwriter, yeah. like a country music songwriter. Realized pretty quick that he just didn't have the talent for it. But he kind of bounced around in those circles. With a lot of his friends were musicians and songwriters. So he spent about 5 years as a single dude in Nashville yeah. in his mid-20s, just kind of bouncing around and being a part of that scene. Mm-hmm. And one story he used to tell, he was friends of a friend with Scotty Moore, who was Elvis's guitar player. So he told me this story 50 times growing up. So there was one night, this was probably about 65, 66, mm-hmm. That he's hanging out with his buddy. Him and his buddies just always sit around and try to write songs and, you know, kind of almost like an open mic or like a house full of open mic comics, you know, who are just trying
riffing,
to,
putting it all together.
Mm-hmm. So they would, he lived with a buddy, and just to hear him tell, there was a nice little clique of friends that were always in and out of this apartment, hanging out, writing songs. And a couple of those guys went on to a little bit of success, wrote some songs for some big mm-hmm. guys or whatever. But one night, Scotty Moore comes over, who was not Elvis's former guitar player. 1966, yeah. Hey, I just got off a world tour.
Yeah,
Elvis is across town, whatever. So he's hanging out with Scotty Moore and a few of these other guys. And then DJ Fontana comes over, who was Elvis's drummer. So now he's sitting here.
Handle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good name. So there's like four or five of these dudes sitting around drinking beer, talking to Scotty Moore and DJ Fontana. And then apparently, the way Dad tells the story, Scotty Moore has to get up and go take a phone call, comes back, and he goes, "Hey, guys, I think Elvis might swing by." My dad's like, "What the fuck?" And the whole night they were like, "Yeah, Elvis is in town. He's right across the street."
Yeah.
You know, and this was prime, like, famous Elvis, 1965, 1966. But the way Scotty Moore, like, articulated it, and I can appreciate this, he's like, "Yeah, sometimes Elvis, you know, he likes to just hang out with some guys and not be Elvis. Just, you know, so he might come over and drink some beer and hang out with us." And the whole night, everybody's sitting around with their fingers crossed, and he never came.
Oh.
But, like, Dad telling that story
like
of,
Santa
like,
Claus.
Yeah, like, "I almost got to hang out with Elvis." And, I always thought that he just, you know, I mean, for a guy who, you know, if you're not in show business and you never had any, you know, encounters with celebrity or show business or anything, like, for just a normal working class dude to, like, almost get to hang out with Elvis,
that's a story he told. It feels like with comedy too, like, when you're like, you know, you're just a bunch of people at a show in a green room, mm-hmm. and so and so drops in, like, oh shit, I guess Chris Rock can go on next.
Well, it's like I told that story about hanging out with Brian Regan, and he even said, he's like, "You know, now that I play theaters, I don't get to hang out with comics, so that's why I love coming and doing this shit." He came and hang out with us all night, just like one of the dudes, you know?
So your dad understood maybe a little bit of the vagabond ways of trying to be an artist, and you gotten to get out.
He was so supportive.
So
supportive. He thought it was so cool when I started doing comedy. Whatever I was in throughout my life as far as career-wise, he then became into it. Like, when I became a radio DJ in my early years, he thought that was the coolest because he wanted to be a radio DJ. He tells this long story about when he was 15, he almost became a radio DJ at the local station. It was him and his buddy. I forgot the guy's name, but Dad was 15. His buddy was 16. They both were interested in being DJs. Yeah. They would hang around the station, harass the DJs, harass the station managers, mm-hmm. and they just loved that world of, like, being close to music and stuff. And they had an opening for a DJ, but you had to be 16. So his buddy got it, and Dad never got to be that. So when I became a DJ, he thought that was great, but he was just so supportive. And let me tell you, all right, this is kind of the meat of this story. This is a good example of what kind of dude my dad was. All right, fast forward a few years. All right, my mom, she had a previous marriage that was very short-lived. And out of that marriage came my brother Jay, who's a great dude, by the way, who's mm-hmm. sometimes listens to the podcast. But we'll get into it a minute later, you know, as far as modern day, what Jay's doing for the family, you know, post all this stuff. But anyway, 1974, my mom hooks up with this guy. They get married. It doesn't last any time. My mom, post wreck, by the way. So 1974, my mom in a wheelchair, mm-hmm. marries this dude, gets pregnant a few months after the marriage. And dude, as soon as she gets pregnant, dude said, well, I didn't need an unwanted kid and a wife in a wheelchair. I'm going to bounce.
Classy.
So this
fella.
Piece of shit just bolts on a 24-year-old woman in a wheelchair who is now pregnant, and pops is well, like, I'm out.
That guy's got a special place in the afterlife.
So anyway, so now mom moves back in with her parents, my grandparents, my deceased grandparents. She's 24. She's been in a wheelchair for 3 years, prime of her life, and now mm-hmm. she can never walk again. Now she's got a kid that she wanted. You know, mm-hmm. It's neither here nor there. But now she's got a kid, and the kid's pop is bounced. So now she's in a wheelchair with a kid.
This makes that Johnny Cash autobiography look like fucking cupcakes. Jesus Christ, man.
Now get this. My dad was friends of a friend. My dad lived in Nashville. My mom lived in Atlanta. My mom was like, you know, rightfully so, super depressed during this period.
Yeah.
Just realized she's going to spend the rest of her life in a wheelchair. Just has a kid, and she's excited about the kid, but now his dad's gone. So some friend of a friend, they drag her up. Grandma and grandpa take care of my brother for the weekend. Her friends drag her up to Nashville to hang out with some friends. She meets dad just casually as a friend. And
I wouldn't phrase it like that.
but I was absolutely, yeah. It's weird talking about you folks and romance. But.
No, I'm just trying to make jokes in here.
So they hit
they
it
drag
off.
Her up. I'm just a picture of them pushing a woman in a wheelchair who doesn't want to go. It's like, well, tough shit because we're pushing you that way.
No, but she didn't want to go. But they were like, look, you've got to get out of the house.
I know, but in my head, it's like, well, you don't have a choice because you're on wheels and we're moving you.
But so anyway, they hit it off. They start a long distance phone call thing. They joke. The family joke was we had to get married because we had a $600 phone bill. You know, they were talking so much on the phone that eventually 4 months later. Their courtship only lasts 4 months. This is what my dad starts to propose to her, and he explains, he's like, hey, I want to marry you. And she's like, you don't want to marry me. I'm in a wheelchair. I got a kid. You know what Don Stone says? He looks her right in the eye. He says, the only thing I want to change about you is your last name.
Ooh.
Come on.
Ooh.
That's pretty. So this dude...
That's
he's
one of the smoothest lines I've ever heard in my life.
I'm going to marry you, and I'm going to adopt him. He married my mom and adopted my brother in the same day. I don't give a fuck. Let's do it. All I want to do is change your last name. That's Don Stone right there.
That's a guy.
And
that's a
43 years later, just never spent a night apart. You know, when I was growing up, they'd have arguments and stuff here and there, but
I'm gonna cry,
not a
man.
Hint of
that's
abuse.
That's an honorable man.
All I want to change about you is your last name. He married a disabled woman in a wheelchair and adopted her son in the same day. And it's like, game on, let's go start a life. And then a couple years later, I came around.
I think you have to have kids, Dave.
But that's the kind of dude my dad was.
You got that good blood, man.
And
not a lot of that in the world anymore.
And just just a gentleman. I never heard my dad talk about women. There was never any off-color jokes. Never caught him looking at women. Just a gentleman through and through, and just a great dude. Like never, like you know. And they struggled. You know, my mom unable to work. You know, I mean, now she could technically find some online job, but you know, when she was this is 40 years ago. She's trying to raise two kids from a wheelchair. Second income just wasn't a possibility.
Yeah, yeah.
So dad busting his ass his whole life. And, you know, of
what
course, we had medical bills out the ass because the mom's always had some sort of problem. He did everything, man. When I was little, he was into he worked for like a collection agency for like a big corporate, like past due stuff. Like he's the guy, you know, not a, you know, now that I look back on it, you know, not a necessarily a job that one would want or people would deem honorable, but like, you know, he was the guy that would call people and be like, look, you're, you know, you got to pay your bills.
Well, I think about those kind of job, like prison guard or something. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's
somebody's
the job you take when you need a job.
So he did that for a while. And then like during my teenage years, he tried to get into that field like on his own. I think he had a partner and then they started their own business and that went well for a few years, but then, you know, something happened and it went south. So I remember as a teenager, Dad was just like Mr. Entrepreneur. Like we did everything. Yeah. He had a firewood business. We had that for like 5 years where he was like a firewood middleman. We delivered to barbecue restaurants. He had a big lot in our little hometown. And once a week, an 18-wheeler would come through and just drop off like 12 trees, essentially trees.
Oh, okay.
And then we'd get out there. He had a big gas-powered splitter.
Yeah.
And we'd get out there with a chainsaw and just cut that tree into 10 pieces and take those 10 pieces and put them through the splitter. And then, you know, a day later, you got, you know, 10,000 pieces of firewood.
Yeah.
And then we'd load up the truck and deliver them to barbecue restaurants. So he did that for a while. We used to sell baseball. We had a baseball card shop. I actually found our business card when I was back home going through some stuff. We had a baseball card, which I was 13, 14 and just obsessed with the baseball card. So like for Dad to be like, hey, I think we can make some money doing this. So we had like the actual brick and mortar. But then on the weekends, a lot of times we'd go to festivals, like card shows.
Conventions, yeah.
Yeah. So he did that. He had a vending machine business where like he supplied all the break room vending machines for all the Walmarts in North Georgia. Just the break room, not like the ones for the customers.
No, I remember that. Yeah. I remember that being a thing. Like, people, yeah, like the soda pop vending machine, like,
yeah, so
something you don't realize as a business, like, oh yeah, somebody maintains all these,
yeah,
and goes around checks and stocks them all.
So just one of those guys that just, you know, whatever it takes, we're gonna, you know, didn't, you know, wasn't overly educated. He was a smart dude, but he didn't have a big degree to fall back on.
Yeah,
but just figured out a way, you know, whatever it was, and later just got into all kind of things. And then the last job he had in the last years of his life, he was a he worked for CSAC, which is a music publishing and licensing company. So he would call bars and stuff and be like, yo, you'll have, are you playing music, are you playing live music, karaoke stuff, and you got to pay these annual fees and stuff, that money goes to the songwriters. And he did that. And again, like kind of music business adjacent. And he used to, he was real proud of that
and
job.
Collection adjacent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he would get the artist paid.
Yeah. Yeah. He really loved that. And he was always bragging about, oh, CSAC just signed up Bob Dylan. So now I get to collect all the royalties on Bob Dylan songs and blah, blah, blah. And just, but one thing I'm so happy is he always struggled, you know, not struggled, but like just, there was never a surplus of money growing up, but I didn't know. I never missed a meal, obviously. Yeah. Never. I got to do anything and everything I wanted, so I never knew it. But later in life, you know, I learned that, like, you know, times were real lean. And he worked. I thought he was going to just be one of these guys that has to work till the day he dies.
Yeah.
And I always, you know, when I was in my 20s doing other careers and radio and stuff, I always was like, ah, I wish I could just make enough fucking money just to let him retire. I was afraid he would never get to retire and enjoy his glory years. He was, when they moved to Worthen, they used to live in Waleska, which is about an hour north of Atlanta.
Yeah.
They moved to Worthen to cut their house payment in half and cut basically when they moved to Worthen, he was able to then retire. So the last 3 years of his life, he got to retire and he had a garden and he had a little buddy down the street who was a farmer. He'd go over there 3 times a week and they'd piddle around on his tractor. But just talking to him these last few years, you could tell he was just like that relief of like, I don't have to work anymore. Like I can just, they didn't have a ton of money, but they had enough to where he didn't have to work and he could just fart around. He was just a retiree living out in the country, messing with his garden, hanging out with his farmer buddies. They were big into the little church there. He was going to join the VFW and that made me so happy that he at least got 3 years of classic retirement.
That's, I mean, it sounds, I'm trying not to be morbid either, but like if you get to go out when things are going well, to other people, it sounds tragic.
Yeah.
like, oh, things were finally the way he wanted it. Like, but if I mean, like, I'm, depending on what day it is, if I, for me personally, if I adhere to, like, well, when you die, it goes back to, like, how you were when you were before you were born. Maybe mm-hmm. nothing's there. Mm-hmm. And so your final moments are like, oh, I did it. I did everything I wanted, and I'm happy. Mm-hmm. And then you're gone. That's kind of the ultimate success story.
Yeah, yeah.
That, I mean, it's very sad, and then mm-hmm. it's sudden, and then it's, you know, and I'm, I mean, the stories you're telling about it make me well up over here because, I'm, you know, you think about your own parents and you have them, like, oh, maybe I'm not showing my appreciation mm-hmm. enough. But the fact, like, if he got to, like happy, like truly happy, mm-hmm. yeah, taken away from the fact that, you know, you got to worry, you know, you're worried about your mom, I'm mm-hmm. worried about you, everybody else around, but, oh, we did it.
Yeah.
Full life that ends with happiness.
Yes.
Like, that's, you can't, nobody's going to not die.
Yeah, we're all going to die.
So if the time comes when you're on an upswing,
mm-hmm. yes,
isn't that the best possible scenario?
That makes me so happy that he went out on top, so to speak. Because, you know, 12 years ago, he could have had a heart attack in the back of a firewood truck, knowing that he had a mountain of debt hanging yeah. over his head and whatever, you know. So they kind of got straightened out financially. He was able to just kind of take it easy in retirement. He had 3 good years of just, hey, I'm down here in this new town. I'm loving it. I got a garden. My wife's doing fine. My boys are finally doing yeah. fine. And, like, I'm so glad that he went out that way.
And maybe that's – the time, like, there's no right timing for it, but yeah. maybe that's the, not that it was willed or anything. That's what I remember, like, people that retire, they say sometimes that mm-hmm. does cause it because their purpose is taken away.
Yeah.
Like, my dad's never going to not work. Mm-hmm. Like, he has to be doing something.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't know how to sit still.
Yeah.
So.
And one thing I'm so happy about, and we touched on this off the air, but, like, you know, I've thought about this for 20, 25 years as far as, like, you know, once you become an adult mm-hmm. and then once reality sinks in of, like, oh, my parents are going to die one day. And I had a grandmother. I didn't have any grandparents on my father's side because, like I said, yeah, you know, yeah. explain that. So my two grandparents were my mother's mom and dad. And my grandmother died when I was, I don't know, she died in 2002. And she had Alzheimer's for mm-hmm. 12 years. So for 12 years, we watched her slowly deteriorate into, I hate this word, like, not to be derogatory, but a vegetable. Like, she just, oh, yeah. mentally, she was a vegetable by the time she died. And we'd go visit her, you know, at the end, she was in a nursing home. And I used to think, like, oh, God, I hope I never have to rot away in a nursing home. And more importantly, I hope my family and people I love, I don't want to see – I couldn't imagine
yeah.
my mother or father just rotting away in a nursing home. And one of my biggest fears was always, like, you know, when I was 20, I used to think, like, what happens when I'm 40 and mom or dad's in a nursing home and I can't really afford to put them in a better one, or I can't yeah. – you know, like, just that – oh, the thought of your parents just – and I'm so sorry for anybody listening who has experienced that. But, like, I'm so grateful that, like – even though it was sudden and it caught everybody off guard, at least, you know, it wasn't a cancer thing that took yeah. forever. It wasn't an Alzheimer's. There was no hospice. There was no, it was just like literally Wednesday, I thought everything was great, and Sunday he was dead. So, and as heartbreaking as that was, and as swift and unexpected as that was, at least I can think, well, at least he didn't wither away.
Well, yeah. I mean, on top of all that stuff, though, I mean, you're holding up. I mean, you're a dude, too. You know that? You
well,
know, dudes don't show emotions a lot.
Well, we talked yeah. about, you asked me recently, when's the last time I cried? Well, that box has been checked.
Okay. So.
I've had some good cries and just... that journey home, you know, across the country, oh, 3 or 4 man. Days of just nut by yourself, just with your own thoughts.
Oh, Katie didn't drive back with you?
No, Katie flew out for the funeral and flew back.
That's good. I'm
yeah,
glad you
yeah, so,
she was there.
And she was, out. Oh, it was so great to have her yeah. around, you know, just because it was such a, oh, that week was so tough. And,
yeah.
But just, but a nice funeral and, oh, man, they played. one of his favorite. You may not know this artist. Vince Gill was this huge big country guy in the 80s. And one of my dad's favorite songs was Go Rest High on That Mountain. Mom and dad mom is still, and dad was, they were very religious. So, yeah. You know, they were still very connected to spirituality and the religious world. And that song obviously has a religious connotation, but they played that at the funeral. And that song's a tearjerker.
Music will just make me cry if it's good. And then with the situation.
Yeah. With no context, that's a sad song. But like having to hear that at the funeral, it was just like, good Lord. But nice little funeral and, you know, nice service and everything. Let me tell one more quick apropos
of nothing.
Tell
whatever you want to tell, man.
This just popped in my mind. You it doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about.
Tell what you want to tell, man.
My brother reminded me of this story. If you'd have seen this. Just, I don't know, the comedic twist in this was so funny. All right. 1992. Me and my brother are living at home. We're in high school, and both of us huge Atlanta Braves fans. And any Braves fans will remember that Braves sucked forever, all throughout the 70s and 80s. Braves were terrible. 1991, they turned it around, went to the World Series, didn't win, but turned it, you know, so now we're good. Next year, 1992, it's the National League Championship Series. They're playing the Pirates, and baseball fans and Braves fans will know exactly what I'm about to talk about. But Game 7. Winner goes to the World Series.
Yeah.
Game 7, the Braves have been down the whole game. It's like, oh, shit, we're going to lose this game. Bottom of the ninth, we're down by one, bases loaded, two outs. So we need one run to tie. We need two runs to win. It's like 11:30 at night. It's like a Monday night. My dad's got to go to work the next morning, so him and mom are asleep. It's 11:30 at night. Me and Jay, my brother, are in the living room watching the big TV. Braves win the game. Bottom of the ninth, two outs. Some no-name player that wasn't even on the roster at the beginning of the year gets a base hit. Guy on third scores. Guy on second is this guy named Sid Bream, who might as well have been 75 years old. Just banged up knees, way past his prime.
Last go at it.
Yeah, and like he starts running, and he rounds third, and I'm like, oh, shit, he's going to be out by a mile. Guy throws it. Sid Bream's just chugga.
Yeah.
Slides safe. Braves going to the World Series. Me and Jay lose our shit.
Yeah.
We're jumping up and down, just losing our shit. Oh my God. Just making all kinds of racket, hugging each other, yelling. Well, then down the hall comes my dad, who was dead asleep in nothing but his tidy whities. Uh-huh. No shirt, no nothing, just his old man briefs. He comes down the hall just pissed. It's like, what are y'all doing? It's 11:30. What is all this racket? I gotta go to work in the morning. And me and Jay go, Dad, the Braves are going to the World Series. And he immediately went from rage to jubilation, like once it sunk into what. And then he starts, we're all three jumping up and down. We're like that, just all three, like a just holding each other, jumping up and down. And to see, but to see, like within a split second of what the hell are you idiots? Do we did what? Oh my God!
Immediately,
it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen, and just the joy because when he came down the hall, he was so pissed, and then just like you could just see it sinking. We did what? They're going, oh my God! Okay, yeah. And all three of us just jumping up and down in the living room. That just one of the funniest things I've ever witnessed. My dad do.
Man.
So yeah, good dude, old Don Stone. You know, there's a ton of stories, but those are
rough
just,
start and then made it count.
Yeah, yeah, and
got
just,
a good run out of it without, regardless of the, how yeah. it
and,
started out. Was like, no, not gonna get me.
Yeah, and for 43 years, took care of a disabled woman, just every need she ever had. Just you know, it's like, yeah, nope, no, just. I got it, like, and just that trait, that characteristic, I think, and that's something. I probably value that more than anything that he handed down. Of just, and not that I'm perfect, and not that I'm, you know, I'm like everybody. We all deal with our own shit, but just that ability to be like, take a deep breath, it's gonna be all right.
Yeah,
you know, and.
World's not ending.
Yeah, the world's not ending, and but also not just blind, stupid. It's going to be all right. It's like, all right, how are we going to fix this?
Yeah, yeah.
It's rather not than just wish it away.
Yeah,
He was a get shit done type of dude.
Yeah, you're not putting your head in the sand waiting for it to go in.
Mm-hmm. Just a great dude, man.
Well, so. I think you got that handed down to you. So,
but yeah, you know, man.
Carrying on. Mom's all right. Living with your brother.
Yeah, I'll explain this real quick. Shout out to my brother and his wife, my sister-in-law Beth. So weird. A week before Dad died, Beth and her son, my nephew Wesley, decided to just visit. They without my brother. I don't think they've ever done that. They've been married 19 years, my brother and his wife, and they visit, you know, as often as they can. They've lived all over. They both spent many years in the Air Force. She's now retired. It's funny, like when you go into the military that early, you can retire after like 20 years. So she retired at like 39. It's just weird to.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not even 40, but you're retired from a career.
They take care of you with that, then?
I think so. Yeah, I think she's got a nice pension. Yeah. So anyway, like a week before my dad died, Beth and
your mom. Wait, sorry, your mom was in the Air Force.
Beth was in the Air Force.
Oh, your sister-in-law was in the Air Force.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not my mom.
I was confused.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry if I didn't make
not
that
to
clear.
Say that she could. I was gonna say that's a good choice. In a wheelchair, but no, give me the Air Force. Give me the one that's about flying.
No,
not even the one that's on the ground. I want the one that's in the air.
No, mom. Okay, mom, unfortunately, never really. She was studying to be. She almost had her own hair salon. She was. Mm-hmm. She was an apprentice at a hair studio and was about to purchase her own business and when all that happened at 21. Anyway, my sister-in-law, Beth, and my brother, Jay, they both spent many years in the Air Force. Beth is now retired. So like a week before my dad died, Beth and Wesley just go to visit my mom and dad, which I thought was kind of like, oh, Jay's not coming? And then she's just like, no, she's wanting Wes to see his grandparents, you know? Not that there's anything wrong with that. It was just, they've never visited without my brother. And it was just like, and they were going to stay like 8 or 9 days. And I thought, well, I don't even stay 8 or 9 days. What are y'all doing? So, but during their visit is when this happened. And, you know, my mom being disabled just cannot live alone. And Beth was like, well, I'm going to stay here with your mom until we figure this shit out. And once they left for that trip in June, Beth and Wesley have not been home yet.
Yeah.
They just stayed, and she's taking care of mom. And I even felt guilty. You know, I stayed about 2 weeks, maybe almost three. I don't know. I was down there for a few weeks after this happened, and I was like, you know, Jay's got a 9-to-5. He had to get back up there and go to work. But I was like, you know, she's my mom. I can stay. Ultimately, we're going to try to sell her house and move her in with Jay and Beth up in Louisville. But until her house sells and until they're ready to move, Beth and Wesley just staying with mom and taking care of her. And I was like, well, you know, I can do it. But she's like, no, you go back to LA. You handle your stuff.
Yeah, you were such a get stuff done. Like, talk about like taking on that trade of your dad. Like, we were exchanging texts. We haven't really talked.
We
were texting. I'm like, you got enough going. I feel bad not calm, but I was like, but it's like, I always say, like, well, you got enough going on. We're going to sit there and just bullshit. We don't talk on a phone. We text, get we come here and we talk about our stuff. You're like, all right, well, I don't know when I'm going to be back to do the podcast. I'm like, man, that's not a concern
right now.
You were back on the road like 2 weeks later. I was like, but also, I'm having not gone through something like that. I mean, that's where you go to sort your head out is go do stand up. This is what we've done to not just make a living and try and like be creative, but also to process the world around you. Like, stand up takes on that role.
Yeah. Well, it was tough.
I don't know if that was something you were doing.
I did. I canceled 4 shows that week, and I canceled like Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and Columbus, and my last night in Cincinnati. But then the following Friday, Saturday, I had Wilmington, North Carolina. Mm. And I was going to cancel that, but then I was like, well, this is horrible motivation during a time of tragedy. But I was like, I kind of need the money because I'm missing out on those shows I canceled.
No.
But so I kept that date, and, you know, Dad died on Sunday. And then Friday night, I'm doing 2 shows at a comedy club. And they went well, but it was – ooh, you talk about hard to be funny.
Well, I can't. Even if I'm just distracted or annoyed about something, I have a hard time getting into the zone.
Yeah, it was real tough. But I was like, I got to do this at some point anyway. And Dad would have probably been, you know, go make your money, you know?
And I
did need that paycheck, but I was just like, oh, shit. But yeah, I did 2 shows Friday, 2 shows Saturday. you know, 5 days after my dad died. And they, like I said, they went well, but like, they're just, man, you know, like, cause like comedy, like that's the polar opposite it's, of tragedy. Like the last thing you want to do during a tragedy is try to be funny. And then, like I said, I could have canceled.
Well, it becomes like, well, I mean, being funny in a situation becomes like a defense mechanism for your emotions, but not stand up. Like, here's my jokes that I have planned out.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, kind of the discussion that we were slightly talking about now about people like dictating what comedy should or shouldn't be. But that's a professional level. But I mean, yeah, I can't imagine like knowing, like, I've gone on autopilot on stage before where I'm like bothered about something else in my life. Yeah. And I know the jokes are coming out, but not with any kind of enthusiasm.
Yeah. Well, and I was fearful too that like, you know, that week, like I was just like, oh man, what if I just start crying on stage? You know, you know, I was fearful that that might happen. Cause you know, man, you talk about getting in touch with your emotions and crying and stuff like that week, just out, just any little thing, just out of nowhere, just, you know, just.
But that's good. Oh, you're not a guy who does that. So you probably had a lot pent up. I get once a week, I get something going. So I'm.
Yeah. And, but since then, I've been doing okay. It's just, like I said, just trying to find the positive, and like no hyperbole. I just have zero bad memories. Yeah, yeah. Just anytime I think of my dad, it was something good, something funny, and you know, he was just a great dude. And I just feel so bad for those people who go through this but still have so much like, I'm sorry, he's dead.
Didn't resolve.
Yeah, unresolved, or like he really was an asshole. But you know, and there's none of that with this. You know,
yeah.
It's just I'm so lucky that like. You know, and it's got me, you know, not
that we're not gonna, I just hope you're not like keeping things bottled up because you're trying to be a dude.
No, I'm not such a proud meathead that I'm just gonna, you know, I understand the importance of, you know, regulating your emotions.
Well, you got a lady there too that
she's been great
connection with.
And, yeah. And she was great. And yeah, just so glad that, you know, for lack of a better term, like he went out on top. Everything in his life was pretty darn good, you know, when that happened. So that makes me happy, as opposed to him dying, you know, when things were bad or at a low point, and it was just.
Is your mom kind of maybe seeing that too? I know she's obviously is.
Yeah, she's taking it pretty hard, but she's day by day she's getting better, and you know her world's just been turned upside down.
Yeah,
you know, 43 years, you know, just joined at the hip, just. I mean, there was no, like, they didn't do anything alone. It was just, they were just a duo all the way through.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, in the blink of an eye, not only is her husband dead, now she's going to have to move. She can't stay there by herself.
Well, you know, for as much as, you know, you might want to knock organized religion for this and that, it does provide a good sense of community. Mm-hmm. Somebody just coming in, even if she's in a new city, showing up at a church and be like, here's my situation. A church is known for like, all right, well, we're going to help you out the best way we can.
And the little church.
Having that community, you know.
Yeah. And the where she's at now, that community's helped her a lot, like that whole week afterwards.
Yeah.
Just what's funny, the people down there do. I don't know if this is a Worthen, Georgia thing or an old people thing, but everybody came by unannounced. Like just, it was just every day it was a new group of people just popping in. Just
really?
Just, hey, Nancy, we got you a chicken casserole.
They bring food, right?
They bring food, and just unannounced, just throughout the day, just I would just be watching TV, and in my peripheral, I'd just see an old lady walking across the porch, and I'm like, oh, somebody's here. And
anything good to eat?
Yeah, there's some pretty okay. Some of it was like, it's a thought that counts. But
I'm already sad. What are you doing to me?
Yeah, but there was a couple of winners, and just.
I mean, I'm not asking you to critique every dish. But
our good buddy, who we'll talk about here in a minute, Andy Sanford, him and his mom sent a honey baked ham. A surprise honey baked ham, mail order ham.
You felt a little bit better that day.
Oh my God.
You felt a little bit all right that day.
They sent a honey baked ham and a pecan pie.
Oh man.
And just, honey baked ham. Unexpected honey baked ham. Oh my God. I immediately went out and bought a big loaf of white bread and some mayonnaise. There's nothing better than a...
At what point, looking at all this food, are you like, you know what my dad just died of, right? How about some Honey Nut Cheerios? Maybe something actually, you know, give me a few extra years.
Well, my mom did very tactfully. Like, she wasn't trying to hurt my feelings, but she was just like... I can't remember how she said it, but basically paraphrasing, like, maybe this would be a little bit of a wake-up call.
If I would drink Budweiser, my mom would always, because her father was an alcoholic, she's like, he would drink Budweiser. I'm like, it's beer. Everybody drinks Budweiser. Yeah. It's not like, oh, God, I'm going to have the same
problem. Didn't die of Budweiser.
Yeah.
But, yeah, a lot of food, just a lot of sweet old ladies in these little southern towns just stopping by with chicken casseroles and homemade pies and all kinds of stuff.
I told you I went to a buffet in Utah, and one of the dishes is just called funeral potatoes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what was that again?
It's just like scalloped potatoes.
Why funeral potatoes?
Because that's what you eat casseroles at funerals.
Yeah.
But I would think like, Don't put that label on it when it's just at the buffet and nobody's died. That was morose.
Oh, man. Well, enough about me, buddy. You've had some adventures.
Enough about me. I got nothing.
Oh, come on. What have you been up to? You've been traveling?
Well, a little bit. Like, all right, you know, I'm concerned for you and trying to be less small-minded about things, you know, get tunnel vision about what you're worrying about with comedy and all this stuff. And then what you went through, I'm like, maybe there's bigger things to worry about and more causes to celebrate being alive than pissing and moaning about basic shit. So I went out and just drove around for a while, went out to Colorado and did some off road with my buddy.
Wow. What part of Colorado?
We're kind of we went to Pikes Peak and up by Colorado Springs and just found some trails. It was good to just get up in the mountains. I mean, I don't do the super crazy stuff with the Jeep, but just being able to get on trails and sit in the middle of nowhere, sit in the woods.
Yeah.
And did that. And then I was back in Chicago, back home, and I was trying to, like, I'm pretty combative. I can be pretty combative with my parents. Maybe I was thinking about, like, you know, how sudden things can change, and maybe it's not worth getting upset about, you know, being so triggered by stuff. And so I decided my choice was I was just going to get high in front of my parents.
Instead of
getting stoned and then being paranoid that they knew about it, I just had my vape pen. I came home and I was like, it's weed. And I smoked it. I gave it to them. I'm like, smoke it. You need to smoke it.
Did they?
My dad took a drag. My
really?
Took a drag. Yeah, and then I got the fuck out of there because I'm like, well, this is going to be weird. So I left.
Wow.
And then I came home. Like, the next day, my mom was like, I was so relaxed. I don't even know what the word for it. I was just calm. I'm like, yes, it's weed. You should smoke this all the time because you need to relax. Mom's very tightly wound about stuff. She listens to this. Uh-huh. But she's worries about everything all the time. And it's always, you know, concern. And from a good place, but to the point where, like, you're making yourself nuts with how much you're worrying about stuff you can't control. I've joked about it before. Yeah. She's got control issues.
Yeah.
And that gives her anxiety. You can't control everything. And you got to just accept that the world's going to move the way it's going to move.
Uh-huh.
Your family's happy. Stop worrying about stuff all the time.
She's got a great family. Her kids are doing great.
Yeah. And she's got to just she just needs to get out of the house or find something that makes being in the house more relaxing because she doesn't leave the house.
Yeah.
And that's her world. And so if things aren't going well in the house, well, it seems like the whole world's falling apart. It's like, nah, the basement just needs to be remodeled. That's all it is. It's your basement that nobody sees anyway.
Yeah.
There's a whole world out there of fun things to do. But because you don't leave the house in the basement, oh, half your house is shit. So the world's shit. Like, so anyway, I got to smoke some weed. And then I came home. You know, I'm trying not to get, you know, I got my limitations with what I can and can't talk about and get into with her. But I got home the one night. I'm like, all right, we're just sitting on the porch. And I'm going to smoke my vape pen. And I unlocked the key to, like, all right, you talk about whatever you want to talk about. And I'm kind of high, not like so out of it, but like I can still communicate. But like, all right, you want to tell me about how there's a – she's like, oh, there's a turtle epidemic. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? It's like the neighbors found a turtle in their pool, and I had to stop off Route 53 with some other drivers to help a turtle across the street. I'm like, well, this is fascinating. Yeah, go on. Talk about a turtle, like a little one. She's like, no, about this big. She's like, but 14-inch long. I'm like, that's a big turtle. She's like, I know. We had to get it out of the street. Then she told me about how the old neighbors who used to live next door tried to kill a tree by drilling holes in it and pouring gasoline in it. I'm like, that's some cold shit. And I just sat on the porch, and I just finally just letting her go off.
That's great.
But listening to it, like, all right, that's a weird thing. Yeah. Say something else weird. Oh, you want a guaranteed some weird shit's going to come out of somebody's mouth? Talk to old Deb. I didn't mind getting caught in the Deb web that night.
The Deb
web. And then she started talking about some 2020 special she saw about. Because this is like the most fun suburban thing in the world. Like my buddy Bob, who's divorced, is like went on a Tinder date and he thought he got strep throat. And we're like, honestly, that's the – if you're going to catch something from a Tinder date, that's not too bad. But so he panicked and went home from the bar because he thought he got strep throat. And I told my mom, she's like, oh, these kids are reacting to an antibiotic about strep throat. But then she said the word antibiotic like 50 times in 3 minutes. I was like, all right, well, I can't listen to you talk anymore because you just said antibiotic too much. I got to go inside. She's like, okay. It was like a nice night. And I was like, oh, I just got to – I think I'm going to send her some – because it wasn't actual weed. Like smoking actual weed, that looks like drugs. Like because it's a vape pen, it just doesn't look like a thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's still weed. I'm like – and of course, she's like, I'm ashamed I did that in front of my son. I'm like, you could buy this in the store.
Yeah.
But talking about the hang-ups of like alcohol versus weed.
Yeah.
And that's – you know, nobody needs to hear the argument of what's more damaging and what, but the stigma on one versus the other. But I had a good trip home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
And I think was trying to not get bothered by stuff so much.
What was the reason for the trip back to Chicago? Just for
I got to Colorado and was doing the off roading, and Rachel was out of town working too. So I was like, well, I purposely gave myself a summer break and didn't book stuff on the road. So do it. You know, people always say, oh, I wish I drove across country. It's amazing. It's the most. Oh. It puts your mind at so much ease.
Yeah.
Because you can't look at your phone. You can't get caught up in stuff. All you can do is just drive. And you're not driving in a city. You're driving on a highway and hopefully a pretty part of the country. Mm-hmm. There's some shit parts, you know, that going from Denver to Chicago is a real bore. Mm-hmm. But
here to Denver is beautiful, though.
That's – I did a mailing list thing today, and I was kind of just rambling about it. But I was like, that's – if you need a trip that you want to clear your head, you're still – if you have to enjoy driving.
Yeah.
Rent a car that you might enjoy driving and stuff. Yeah, and go from here to Denver.
Yeah.
Go from Los Angeles to Denver.
Beautiful.
And see you can go to Joshua Tree and all the weird mystical desert shit you can handle from here. And then you're in Vegas. Vegas is stupid and silly. And go enjoy the stupid silliness of Vegas. And then you leave Vegas.
Utah.
Go to the Grand Canyon. Go see the Hoover Dam, just a marvel of human engineering. Mm. And then go to Arches National Park and see whatever
Moab.
Whatever type of, if you're spiritual, craft. Go see dinosaur footprints.
Yeah.
After you just lost money in Vegas on a stupid, you know, roulette game, go see dinosaur footprints 3 hours later.
Yeah.
And see all that. And then follow the river up through the Rockies into Denver.
Yeah. Oh, the last 3 hours before you get into Denver, like, it feels like Lord of the Rings. Like when you're way down in and those mountains are just hovering over
the
you.
The rivers crash around the train. When you I always saw these things by going to Disney World and seeing the fabrications of the Matterhorn or whatever the mountain train ride thing was, and seeing the way it was fabricated in an amusement park setting.
Yeah.
And then you go to a play like, oh, they kind of nailed it.
Yeah.
Like it seemed ridiculous, like over the top, beautiful, made for that set of like, no, that exists in the real world. Yeah. Those places are real. Like I didn't even go to the Grand Canyon on this trip, but I want to get back. Like that's a place where you have a hard time. What you're seeing and what you're computing in your brain don't match.
Mm-hmm.
Like it doesn't look like a real thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard to believe that you're not looking at a painting or some sort of digital rendering, but that's an actual what you're seeing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was from a stream.
Yeah.
A stream created that.
It's crazy.
So as far as putting stuff in perspective, like seeing those things and what you want to worry about in your life.
Yeah.
That was good. And then, Chicago, just saw friends and hung out and – It was good catching up and just talking to people, and then I just started cruising back, and I got this hair in my ass that I wanted to see White Sands, New Mexico. So,
what part of the state's that?
South. It's like right outside of El Paso, okay. Pretty much. So it's north of El Paso. So I started driving. I got down to Missouri, got to like the Ozarks, just found some campsite by myself. One thing to bitch about it, I don't know if I, living out here for 15 years, I can't handle mosquitoes.
Oh, really?
Look, all the skin's torn off my, look at that.
Oh, wow.
I did that, a mosquito bite, and then I pulled it, like, I tore at my skin and pulled it off my own feet and legs.
Looks like you jumped out of a moving car.
Yeah, it looks like I got road rash because of how much I would scratch my ankles and feet because of mosquitoes, yeah.
Hmm.
I'm freaked out about it, but it's a side note. But camped in the Ozarks, kept driving, made it to White Sands the next day. It's just it's these pure white sand dunes.
Wow.
Amidst, right by a missile range and where they test the nuclear bomb out there, I think, in Los Alamos, or invented it. But so it's desert setting, a little mystical, a little bit weirdness. And I think I was more reality based on this one, you know, thinking about like, oh, you know, like this, the concerns you were having about like, oh, I left and then my parents, you know, I don't want this to be the last time I see him. And like more wasn't, you know, wish I would have seen a UFO, sure, but I wasn't, my mindset wasn't there. My mindset was on more terrestrial concerns. So I walked around these sand dunes It looks like you're supposed to come to an ocean. There's just white sand. You go over one, over the next one. Like, where's the body? And there's not. There's just these. I forget what not basilica.
Yes, yeah, weird to see. I forget what it would white made sand out. With no water nearby.
Pure fine ground white sand everywhere. And there's like trail markers. I'm like, there's no trail. It's just these dunes. And but then leaving there, that was the night that was great because then you're cutting through Arizona, and it was that super blood moon or whatever they keep calling it. So that was coming up behind me, this giant red moon. And then I don't know if you've seen this, like thunderstorms in the desert when you could just see the expanse of land.
Yeah.
And you see like three or four different thunderstorms happening. It was more lightning than I'd ever seen in my life. It was like when you're on a ride and they're trying to do like fake crackling lightning, but it's just flashing light. It's like, all right, this is a bit much. That's how it was.
Wow.
I was like, all right, well, let's just pull over and enjoy it. I found some road before it was raining. I found some road and I kind of had some beers and I only drank one. I'm sorry. I fucked up. I forgot the night that I found a lake in the Texas panhandle and just pulled up. That was more peace. It wasn't really beautiful. It was kind of just like a pond, like a retention pond that people were fishing in. But that's where I just sat and drank some beers and smoked a little weed and felt good about the world, you know?
That's great, man.
Just sat by myself. And then the next night is when I made the drive to get to back to L.A. and just stopped and all this lightning. And I thought my car was going to get hit by lightning.
Really?
But that's how much lightning was happening.
Yeah.
Like seeing the bolts cut across the sky, but seeing the flashes above, directly above the car that would light up everything around it like you're being abducted by an alien. Then the flat, and it was, again, to experience all that and not be like the I want to worry about like, well, but people are arguing that Hannah Gadsby special is good comedy, but it's more of a one person. Like, that's not important.
Yeah, who cares?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
None of the things that I was kind of worried about that I would look at, that I would find on a screen.
Yeah.
That's not important.
Yeah.
You know? So. Oh, and in the midst of all that, I went to New York for a few days because Rachel was working there.
Yeah. How'd you enjoy that?
That city sucks.
Not a fan?
No. I like, my friends are there, and I think it makes better comedians than moving to L.A., but I think because you have to be, because it's survival system. It's like learning how to fight in prison.
Yeah.
That's what I was joking. People like, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. No. That means you stay in New York because you're a fucking sociopath if you can make it in New York.
I get claustrophobic when I'm in New York. It's just 24/7. There's someone in your face.
That's a friend was pointing out. He also said this about L.A., who moved back to Chicago. Or the suburb, but in Elgin, the suburbs, he's like, I would get like forced perspective, like tunnel vision. Like you're all there's always something on either side of you. You're always just closed in. The same thing. Claustrophobia is like forced perspective. There's no way out.
Yeah.
And even more so in New York. Yeah, I kept thinking people were walking directly at me on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Again, my annoyances with all that went away. Drive through the desert by yourself.
There is something special about those. I was doing the math. I think this last journey back home last week was probably my 19th or 20th cross-country drive.
Jesus.
I mean, I've done it. I do it like three times a year ever since I've been out here. Like I've been out here almost seven years, and I'll go on these two or three times a year. And just because most of my work is in the Southeast, that most of my tours are either in the Midwest or Southeast. So when I go on tour, I got to drive to Louisiana before it even starts, you know, that kind of thing.
I was wondering about because I modded the Jeep out to be able to sleep in it, which was kind of worthless on this one because of all the off-roading I did. It's got like a 17-gallon tank, so I'm stopping every 3 hours to fill up. It's kind of a drag. I keep looking at vans and stuff.
How was the Jeep on a long commute? Like with your big tires and everything? Like was it noisy and annoying? Or?
Yeah, but I'm used to it.
Yeah, you're used to it.
It's garbage for a road trip.
Yeah.
I love it, but it's a total waste. It's got a small gas tank. It's got no and shitty gas mileage. Yeah, and it's noise. I got to have the radio cranked all the way up to hear a podcast.
When
it vibrates, I get out of it, and my whole body, like I feel my eyes are still shaking inside my head, and I can't focus on stuff.
When I had my Jeeps, like I mentioned before, I had one Jeep in high school and then one Jeep in my mid-20s. And as much as I loved them, and I did love both those Jeeps, during that period when I owned those vehicles, when I would go ride with another buddy in his car, like – I would just as much as I love the Jeep, some part of me always yearned for like, oh, listen to how quiet the cab of this vehicle is and how smooth it is and you don't hear the wind and you don't have the soft top flapping.
My kidneys don't hurt.
Yeah. So as much as I love those Jeeps, I would always – anytime I'd ride my buddy's car, he had like a halfway decent car. It's just like, oh, this is luxurious.
But the reason the Jeep is like, all right, I'm in the middle of Arizona. I'm just on the 10 coming through there. I was like – you know what? Whatever road, there's no lights, and there's always like, and there's no lights. It's not an exit for anything other than here's a road that just heads wherever the fuck.
Yeah.
Cool. And then, all right, a cow grate on the road and dirt behind it. All right, checking it out.
Yeah.
And not worried about, ooh, what if it gets muddy? What if it's this? I'm like, no, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not wheeling trying to go over boulders, but it's more about being able to get to places you can't. If I was in better health, I think backpacking is what I would like more, but I don't know if I could handle that.
Yeah.
I also still get real scared when I'm by myself.
Really?
Oh, man. There's still – when there's backpacking stuff,
I just get real scared.
There's still moments where it's like, oh, what – like when you're totally alone.
Uh-huh.
Like not even at a campsite alone, but like this is – if somebody wants to get away from the world, they live here.
Yeah.
You know, you're hiding out from the law. This is, this is where you're at.
Huh.
That got a little, you know, you go from like, oh, murderers would live here. If I was a murderer, and then you're like, why am I thinking if I was a murderer? Because you're psychologically, you're not bouncing the ideas off anybody. You're your own sounding board. And that's when shit gets real weird in your head.
Yeah.
When you don't say stuff out loud to people, you're like, well, if I was a murderer, I'd live here. Why would you be a murderer? Well, I guess there's a few reasons. Shut the fuck up, man.
It's like your old joke about driving past the park. That'd be a nice place to have a picnic.
Yeah. I'll put a body right there.
Oh, man. Eat anything good on your journey?
Yeah, I'll give my plugs. My buddy Oasis on the Lake up in Antioch, Illinois. Wisconsin border. Now, that's the guy I used to deliver pizzas for, old Robbie D.
Oh, yeah. I saw that picture.
Yeah, he's crazy.
Uh-huh.
He's a crazy man that I've known for 20 years. He's listening to this. He listens to this now. Uh-huh. He's a fan. He's like, I listen to you guys. I'm like, why? I don't know why anybody listens to that. But that man, that's like his autistic gift is making pizzas.
Really?
Man. Good
stuff.
Damn it. Yeah, he made me a Chicago style. I know I rag on deep dish and other stuff, but Robbie D's going to make one. He's like, what do you want me to make? I'm like, you make whatever you're going to make.
Yeah, whatever you'd like.
You know what you like. Go, just go there. Oasis on the Lake.
Huh.
And it's right. It's in Antioch. I didn't even get a thin. The classic one you got to get was a thin crust with get roast beef and jardiniere. I think I told you about this.
Yeah, we talked about that. Fresh Brothers down the street.
Oh yeah, well that's I get their vegan sausage. I get that's my healthy quote unquote. Okay. That's my welcome home pizza. I get every time I get back from a tour. I get myself a little welcome home pizza from them. But oh man, Robbie D crushed it with the pizzas as always. And he's up there just handling stuff.
That's cool.
So there's that. You know what? I was still kind of like, man, I can't risk having gout when I'm trying to drive stick shift across country. So I kind of kept it pretty mellow.
Hmm.
I had – well, this is what I was laughing at in – was in El Paso. I think Las Cruces or something. Like, oh, I'm going to go to this Mexican restaurant. And like enchiladas are – they're like rolled tortillas with stuff inside of them, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, enchiladas. I'm like, I'm trying not to eat meat. Like, I had my meat when I was in Chicago. I was eating all the crap, my hot dogs, my burritos, and all that shit. But we got on the way back. I'm like, all right, got to be back off of meat. I'm like, oh, enchiladas. I'm like, oh, queso with chili in it. I'm like, yeah, there's no meat in that. I'm getting it. All they gave me, I think, were just three corn tortillas with, like, you know, like the cheese dip you get, queso fundido with the salsa mixed in it.
I love that.
That's and they just dumped it on top of there with rice and beans on the side. And part of me was like, maybe, like, are they just giving me the white boy special of like, here, eat your fucking cheese dip.
Yeah.
It was the best thing I've ever eaten.
Really?
I had to stop myself from licking the plate.
Oh, wow.
Because part of me, I want to be like, this isn't an inch. This is just old tortillas that you poured cheese dip on. Couldn't have been happier.
I love that white cheese. You can't get it out here. You can't get it in L.A. When's the last time you had white cheese dip in L.A.?
I don't even know it's white cheese. I mean, you get queso fundido, which is just cheese with, like, and this had the hatch green chilies.
Oh, I love those. I love those green chilies.
So they just had that kind of swimming around in it.
But yeah, I've never had out here. I think it's just too gringo. I think they're like, no, that's some white boy shit. But, like, I grew up on, like, redneck Mexican food, like back in Georgia, where just part of the meal, like, oh, appetizer, let's get a big bowl of that white cheese dip.
Yeah, I didn't even know. I just knew it was like the you get the Tostitos one. And
yeah.
And you pour the short in the commercial, pour that, and then pour some Tostitos salsa in.
Yeah.
With it.
Yeah.
Of course I will do that.
Oh, man. That's good stuff.
But I had that, and but I didn't, nothing jumped out. I got my standards. I went to my, I had my Portillo's.
Mm-hmm.
I had my my burritos from El Burrito Tapatio, which is a real roulette. You go there when they know they're going to have a lot of people there, like on a Friday or Saturday because they're open late. But you go there at 9 o'clock and you get the best steak burrito you ever had in your life. I went on a Tuesday at 1 a.m. and I'm surprised there wasn't just like leather inside of it. It was a rough one, but I'm like, I knew what I was getting. I knew what time I was going there.
Yeah.
So. But nothing. I don't know, man. This episode isn't about me. This is we're bouncing back and we're making sure you're doing okay. And
I'm
good,
I know
you were getting back into it.
Yeah,
got some. We're getting back into it. That's it.
Trying to, man. Trying to get back to normal. I had a good meal on my way home. It's funny. Like at the beginning of the tour, like I lost like 10 pounds in the first 2 or 3 weeks of the tour. I wasn't drinking. I was trying to. It's funny how I always go on a diet when I'm about to go visit my folks just because, not that they care, but I don't want to just roll up like just a complete slob. Like, you gained 30 pounds since we've seen you last.
That's, I think about like the sensitive stuff, like, oh, am I too sensitive because of how things are? But then you think like, oh, yeah, no, you guys are kind of being dicks sometimes. They have no problem. Like, oof, you put on weight.
Yeah.
All right. Well, fuck you too then.
My parents were always good about it. They never made me feel bad. But, I want to kind of look decent.
My parents are like children and they see something that's different and they just say it out loud.
So I always kind of, take it easy, the few weeks leading up to a visit. And I was, going to visit my folks at the end of this tour like normal. And then like a week before the tour ended, that happened. But ever since then, it was just like, all right, if ever there's an excuse for me to just not worry about my diet.
Yeah.
So like this whole month has just been fucking chaos. But I got to get back into it. But on the way home, I detoured 3 hours out of my way to go to New Orleans.
Oh, really?
Just so I could go to my I talked about it before.
Oh, that
Koshan.
Yeah.
Oh, I went there. I went to New Orleans just to eat at Koshan. And one of the best meals I've ever had. I had I had rabbit and dumplings. Had a big old
rabbit is a deceptively good food.
It was delicious. Oh, and the cliche, but it just tastes like chicken. It just tastes like rotisserie chicken almost, you know. And but they did it like this big, almost like a chicken pot pie. It came in a little small cast iron skillet, and they had these little dumplings. You know, just like these little mini biscuits. There's like four or five of them. And then just like the potatoes and the carrots and the rabbit. Rabbit dumplings. And I also had smoked pork cheek sauce piquante, which is a sauce piquante. It's a very Cajun Creole dish where it's just some sort of like brown sauce with the Trinity, with the peppers and onions and celery. But basically just like three or four big old chunks of just the pork cheek, which is supposed to be the most tender part of the pig.
Yeah, I think when you get it at a taco truck, it's not machaca.
Oh, really?
I think they just call it cabeza.
Huh.
And that's, you can get the, yeah.
But, oh my God. So, ate dinner there at Koshan, ate lunch next door at Koshan Butcher. Next door is their butcher/sandwich shop. Had the best Cuban sandwich I've ever had in my life. A smoked, obviously Cuban sandwich is what, ham and pork, but the pork had been smoked. So a smoked Cuban sandwich. Ugh. So yeah, ate lunch at Koshan Butcher, and then later that night went next door to Koshan and just. And when I got to sit at Koshan, I sat at what they call the chef's table, which is – they have a bar. It's all tables and stuff, but then they have a bar you can sit at. But then they have another counter that's like sitting at a bar, but instead of a bar, it's the kitchen. So I'm just sitting at this counter on a high-top chair, and I'm just 3 feet away from the cooks,
watching
them do their thing with their big – big, huge wood fire pit. Like the pizza. What do you cook a wood fire pizza in? What do you call it? Hearth. Like a hearth.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Had a giant hearth and just watching them do their thing. And then every now and then, like, one of the guys would be like, hey, you ever had our such and such? Like, you ever had our hogshead cheese? And I'm like, no. And he's like, he looked around and just slid
throwing
me.
You, yeah. Throwing you some.
So that was pretty nice. Pretty nice to swing by.
I mean, I feel like, especially in misery, like, I feed it.
Yeah. And then we'll wrap it up here. I know we're going long, but
we're doing whatever we want to do.
And then I got back last week, and I was home for a couple of days, and then just still, you know, just there's no timeline on, you know,
no
grieving. And my lovely Katie says, what are you doing this week? You got anything going on? And I was like, nah, I didn't have any shows booked, and I knew we weren't doing this for another week. Her parents have a lake home up in Lake Arrowhead.
Yeah.
And just on a whim, like last Monday, she was just like, you want to go up to Lake Home? And I'd never been up there. I'd never been to Lake Arrowhead, never been to their house. And I was like, what? And she when it's like an hour and a half away, and not like a mansion, just a cute little three bedroom, one bath, like almost like a bungalow, you know, like a ski lodge type
vacation
looking place.
Spot,
just beautiful.
Oh, I remember texting you and be like, "How you doing, man?" Like checking in. You send me a picture of like some fishing poles, and you know, like cool. I'm like, "All right, you're all right. Right now, you're all right."
Man, I spent 5 days up in Lake Arrowhead, and then she had to go back. She had to come back home to take care of some business. Mm-hmm. She just left me up there. No car, no nothing. So I spent like 3 or 4 days in a row with no car. I went to the grocery store, loaded up, and just – oh, and she bought me a smoker, a little pre-birthday gift.
Oh, really? She
bought me a nice little smoker. So I just sat up there, smoked barbecue, went fishing, just sitting out. They have a little dock by the lake. Just sat up and went swimming in the lake.
See that?
Just – talk about decompressing.
It was
so nice. I'm going back up this week just for my birthday. We're just going to go hang out for a couple days. But just talk about like just the stress of everything just melts when you're in a place like that. Just so beautiful.
But
just,
that's good. You're taking care of yourself. And I mean, I think look at the – you can do that too. Like you don't have to just get back to a job. You got to get back to stuff, but you don't have to get back to a 40-hour week, something where you're already kind of shut your brain off and just think about, you know.
Very fortunate in that regard. Like, I thought about that too. Like, what if I had to go back to like a hard job like the next week?
Yeah.
You know, like, what if I couldn't afford to take off, you know, a couple weeks but or whatever?
Yeah, like, yeah, there's no time frame on it, like you said, but you process it and you got, you know, you got people around you out here, you know.
Yeah. And by the way, thank you so much to, I mean, see, I can't even count how many messages and stuff. So the listeners, some people sent actual physical cards. I got several cards.
Oh, that's sweet.
I got a few gifts. That's people just sweet. Send in coffee and homemade jerky and but just hundreds and hundreds of just, you know, Facebook messages and tweets and stuff, and just too many to even acknowledge. But like, thank you so much, guys. Yeah. That, you know, in a time like that, it's just I don't know. It's just good that,
yeah.
And it's not even me. Like, I don't even care about like, oh, Dave's grieving, but like, just, you know, like, I put a picture of my dad up on Twitter or Instagram.
His Facebook reviews just, were pretty fantastic.
Oh, man. just the cutest thing.
Yeah. just letting people know. I got an avenue to let people know there was good food over here. Let me let them know.
Oh, my God. If anybody saw that, what he's talking about is just – Dad would just take pictures of the buffet and put them on Facebook and just completely unironic, totally sincere. Hey, if you're ever in Sandersville, Georgia, check out Chester Dean's. On Fridays, they have catfish. Just loves shit like that.
Just letting people know. Just doing a service. It doesn't all have to be cynical and shitty on Facebook. It could just be a nice thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and I don't want to go off on another tangent or direction, but like, you know, as far as faith and religion, and, you know, I don't know if there's an afterlife, but man, now I hope there is, just because I hope Pops is sitting around somewhere having a good time.
Yeah.
I hope he's somewhere just enjoying himself.
Well, if there is a, you know, a positive place, it sounds like he earned it too.
Yeah.
It sounds
like
he earned his spot.
He definitely did. So, but yeah. Big thanks to everybody who reached out. I wasn't able to respond to every single one, but I did try to respond to as many as I could. They kind of got backed up,
yeah.
But definitely saw them and much appreciated. So thanks, guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, man.
Don Stone have any favorite meals?
Oh, man, he loved catfish.
Yeah,
He loved catfish. He liked fried chicken. He was just a. This one thing too. This one thing. One more thing about Pops and my mom. My mom made this point. And this is a great quality for someone to have. He was so appreciative of everything.
Yeah.
Of just – he took nothing for granted and just – he found a way to appreciate any little thing.
Yeah.
And my mom was telling me this story that every day she'd make them lunch. You know, the last 3 years he's been retired, hadn't had to go to work anywhere. So she'd just make – for lunch, they'd just eat real light. She'd just make little sandwiches and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she said every day – he would go, Nancy, that was the best sandwich. And she's like, it's just ham and cheese and mayonnaise, you know. Like, it took me 2 minutes, but he was just, Nancy, that's a great sandwich. That's a great meal. Like, he was so appreciative of just even something as dumb as a ham sandwich, but he never took any of that for granted.
You know? Yeah.
And she made a great point. Like, he was such a good family man. He was such a good dad and such a good husband because, you know, like I described, his early – he didn't have a family.
Yeah.
So I think once he became an adult and he got his own family, he was like, all right, this is my chance to have a family finally. Yeah. And he did the shit out of it. Like, he just – he crushed it, man. He crushed it as a dad. He crushed it as a husband. And but, yeah, just the fact – he was just so appreciative of things. And,
yeah.
You know, one of my regrets too is just I always wanted to just get successful enough to where I could just be like, you know – whatever. Here's a bunch of money.
Yeah,
don't worry about shit.
Yeah.
And I wasn't able to do that on a big scale, but there was a few times in the last few years where I'd have, you know, some peaks and valleys with finance and stuff. And I'd go home, and like one time I took them out to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't go to those type of places, even though it's a chain. That's still a $50 steak.
No, that's,
you know,
a good steak.
Solid steak. But like, they just, even if he had the money, he just, from his mentality, he's like, I can't pay $50 on a steak for me.
Yeah.
He would have bought it for her or for his sons.
Yeah.
But man, I think two or three times in the last 5 years, I would take him there,
yeah.
And you would have thought I bought him a Cadillac. He was just, oh, he was taking pictures of it, and we
just
selfies
excited about
with the steak and telling people that his son took him to Ruth's Chris, and just I got a picture of him just smiling with a steak and just so appreciative of shit like that. And
he did it. He won.
Yeah, he won. So rest in peace, Pops. Good dude. So thanks for letting me get all this out of my system.
You do what you got to do.
Well, let's land this bad boy. Before we go, we haven't done a whole lot of this lately. Comic of the week, and we explained why. I don't want to oversaturate it.
Yeah.
Don't want to plug something that I don't sincerely stand behind.
No,
and there's only so much great shit to go around.
People's projects.
Yeah, but our good buddy Andy Sanford's got a new special out. Not an album, but an actual special. You can buy it on you can rent it or buy it on iTunes, Amazon, a few other places. But it's called Shameful Information. And bless his heart, he's been trying to get this thing put out for like 2 or 3 years. He recorded this like 2 or 3 years ago at Red Clay Comedy Festival.
Oh, okay. And, I didn't know what the history was behind.
Yeah, no, just
like
one of those things.
Put it out on his own.
Kind of slow go, you know, in post-production. But recorded it at the beloved Star Bar in Atlanta. I actually opened for him on that show, so I saw it live. And just, I mean, you talk about just someone at the top of their game. Andy, just such a good joke writer. And such a good storyteller, and but yeah, that special is fantastic. So, check out Andy Sanford, Shameful Information. If you want to revisit his older stuff, we plugged this last year. He's got an album called Me the Whole Time. So that would be his first. So this would be his second one, Shameful Information. So check out Andy Sanford, friend of the show, and one hell of a comic. So support him. But yeah, man. So welcome back. Glad we're back in the groove here. I've missed you. I've missed the listeners.
Yeah, buddy.
I've missed all this, you. Man. So it's good to be back. So
we had a very special episode.
But yeah, we'll get back to our typical irreverent silliness soon enough. But but yeah, I just wanted to share some of those stories and honor old Pops. And again, you know, I know it's not a unique situation. Everybody dies. Everybody's parents die. But
but also everybody has to process it.
Yeah,
you know? Everybody's gonna.
So
you got these good stories. It's I mean, you're obviously appreciative and grateful for it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm. You know, you take it for granted. You really do. Like,
well, it doesn't sound like you did. So,
well, yeah, not now, but like. You know, with anything in your life that's good, I think people who are semi-intelligent are enough so to understand that and comprehend it. But I think at some point it's just natural to kind of like, oh, this is normal that I have a great father or normal that I have a great girlfriend or whatever. But like until it's gone, then you're like, oh, shit, I did good on that. So very lucky that I had a great Pops. So
well, that's good. Right,
but yeah, buddy. So we'll get into it next week. Get into our normal silliness. I don't know what we're going to talk about next week, but we'll figure it out. I do have. I'll save this. Okay, I'll tease this real quick. Next week, I will tell you. This is no shit. Mom, how can I phrase this? Mom thinks Pops is still lingering around the house.
Really?
A couple stories. Couple weird little things.
So. My mom thinks my sister's cat knows something lives in her room, but I think she's full of shit. So I'm we can make that transition from real life into our weird bullshit. Uh-huh. And we can talk about it, but okay, all right.
Get into that next week. That just makes me so happy. I hope he is. I hope he's just hanging out. Like,
yeah.
You know?
The energy's still there.
She's got a couple weird little stories, and I'll tell those next week. So
maybe I got to talk to Deb, get her stories for it too.
Anything to plug, buddy? Any shows?
I'm not doing anything.
Okay. Oh well, let's throw this out since it just. I'll plug this. We both just found out this. We're both going to be at the Cola Comedy Con. In South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina.
When is that?
I'm headlining September 22nd. You're headlining the next night, September
23rd. I am.
So Columbia, South Carolina. Check out. I'm pretty sure it's called Cola Comedy Con.
I'm putting that in my calendar because I forgot.
You forgot.
I told you. I checked out of my life.
Yeah.
The past month and a half. Like once I was done with that run, That was right before you left. I'm like, I'm not.
Yeah.
I stopped. I wasn't trying to book stuff. I wasn't answering emails. I mean, irresponsibly in a way. And mm-hmm. I'm shitty if like people were emailing me and reaching out or making messages. I took Twitter off my phone. One of the best mental health things you can do.
Yeah.
So, I'm glad you reminded me.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. September 22nd, September 23rd, our buddy Derek Sheen is headlining the day before me. So 21st is him, 22nd is me, 23rd is you. Columbia, South Carolina, Cola Comedy Con. So look that up and get those tickets. So it should be a good time.
All right.
All right, Dan.
Well, glad you're back and doing okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm hanging in there, man. Got no option other than just keep trudging forward.
Yeah.
So.
All right, buddy.
We'll see you soon. Holler at your boys.
The Boogie Monster.